Hi, and thank you for listening to Dream 10X Radio, where we interview people attempting to live extraordinary lives. Our twofold purpose is to both direct and inspire people bold enough to do the same. Dream 10X. Face your fears and make your life count. Makeup? Can I get a little? Got a little shine.
A little touch up.
Little
yeah.
Touch up. Makeup. Lights. Welcome to the Dream 10X Studio. It's your boy JC. Yeah, okay.
Let's start over and cut.
Welcome to the Dream 10X Studio. It's your boy JC.
And Dr. Cable.
And welcome to episode 64 of the Dream 10X podcast. Today we are going to be talking about some lessons I pulled out of this book called Chaos Monkeys. But before we get into the book Chaos Monkeys by Antonio Garcia Martinez, I was wondering, Cindy, if you would like to talk a little bit about what you did this past weekend.
I feel like I'm in school.
Sorry.
Okay, Mr. Cable. Do you want me to write an essay?
Well, you read the book. I didn't read the book, so I'm just going to be blabbing about what I read. So people want to hear you talk too, maybe. So.
Oh, yeah. So about what I did? Yeah. So I, what did I do? I went to a blacksmithing convention, and it was amazing. And two of my favorite blacksmiths were there. Ellen Durkin, we had a podcast with her on episode 60 about her artwork, and we went to, and so she did a whole demo and made this gorgeous piece.
She did it live?
Yeah.
In front of everybody?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yep. And she had some of the parts already done. So Dale Morris, my other wonderful favorite blacksmith, he runs the Virginia Blacksmithing Institute in Waynesboro, Virginia. Good grief.
Waynesboro,
Virginia. Yep. And he helped her with some of the flowers and stuff initially just to get things going. And, but yeah, she did the whole demo, put the whole piece together. And then at the end, it was for auction. So it was pretty cool. And then Caitlin Morris is another amazing blacksmith who I have a class with, thanks to Julie Maskey, who bought it for my birthday. I have a class with her coming up and over the new year. And she teaches hammer techniques. So really how to get the most out of your hammer, how to position properly, and then how to make some really cool things. So I'm so excited to go learn from her about how to, I already learned that my anvil is too high. And so I'm gonna stand on a box going forward, but I really already just from a brief interaction learned a lot from her already. So it was an amazing conference.
In terms of your anvil being too high, have you noticed that?
Before talking to anybody? Yeah, I've been having issues, and I wanted to confirm that that was the issue.
What kind of issues?
Well, it's...
Like pain? Like, or just...
No. The way that I hammer and have to hammer to get where I want the atoms to go, where I want the metal to move, I have to stand in kind of different positions than I do when I'm at Dale's place in Virginia.
Oh.
And I have more leverage there, and I'm hitting more with the face of the hammer, and it's a different experience. And so I wasn't sure if it was the anvil or me or the height, and my assumption was it was the height, but I wanted to confirm with her, and she validated that.
So you put a lot of time into blacksmithing.
I do.
And and you seem to just love it.
I do.
So it's like effortless for you to like just try to consume all you can about the skill and the art of it.
I love it. Yeah, it's amazing.
Cool.
Thank you.
I wish I had that. I was interested in it a long time ago before I met you, and I bought all the books. And then
you bought all the books!
On the shelf, and then you saw the books, and then you started doing it.
What's interesting too is, so there was another, long story, but there was another Hammerin conference on the other side of Virginia, nearby. And they were very traditionalist, and so their demo person made nails, like and he's a brilliant blacksmith apparently, but he's very like very traditional. This is how you do it. You know, you got to hammer 1,000 nails before you can do anything.
Right.
Versus this conference, where it was more experiential and more creative. So getting out of that standard box, and that's really, I think, what allowed me to realize I could do this too.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
It's funny listening to you talk and diagram things you want to work on. Calling
friends for math skills. Jason, help!
What's the circumference? What's the equation of the circumference of a circle?
Yeah, that happened.
Well, cool. So let's get into what I took away from Chaos Monkeys. This is kind of an interesting book for me because I just grabbed it off of a shelf out of kind of boredom, and it looked interesting to me primarily because I had heard of the Netflix phrase Chaos Monkeys.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was about that, but it's not really about that. And yeah. the Netflix phrase Chaos Monkeys kind of, this is also interesting to me as well. It kind of evolved from the Netflix days when they went from DVDs, so, you know, shipping DVDs to people, to streaming video online. That's a much bigger technical problem, streaming video online, than it is shipping physical DVDs to your door. And so in order to build the back-end technical infrastructure for that, they had to really be sharp. They had to have some really good engineering skills in order to make that happen, since nobody had ever done that before. One of the interesting things about that to me is that when I was
sorry, I didn't expect it to explode.
One of the interesting things about video streaming to me was I actually wrote a paper on how you could conceptually do that when I was taking an IT class at GW, and so I think I'm pretty sure Netflix stole my idea.
Clearly, and that's
where it came from. I never saw a dime from it. I might have talked to my lawyers about this. It was cool that when that actually came out, somebody was actually doing it. I was like, yeah, see, I knew that was coming. So anyway, building this back-end infrastructure needed to be technically robust in order to keep your customers remotely happy with this new video streaming experience. And so one of the things they used to do is like create chaos in the back-end, unplug servers and blah, you know, just do crazy stuff just to break stuff on purpose and see how the system would handle. And you could observe what happened when you did those things, and you could fix things. If you know, I just did this myself. With my Viking Rose software in my development environment, I turned off a back end service and tried to do things in the front end and see what it did, and it didn't do anything.
Ah!
I would click a button and nothing would happen.
Yeah.
And the user doesn't know why.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing, you know, just generate weird things in the back end that maybe might not happen in the real world, but maybe they will.
Mm-hmm.
And see what your user experience is like, and see how you can improve that. And
that's
so
cool.
I was able to catch the errors that were actually occurring then and display those to the user, mm-hmm. just to let them know that something bad is going on in the back end and it needs to get fixed, rather than just sit and do nothing.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing the term Chaos Monkeys kind of derived from. And so I thought it was about that, how to do, like, you know, chaos engineering,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But it's not really about that. It's about startup culture in Silicon Valley.
Mm.
And more specifically, it's about Antonio Martinez's kind of professional experience from going from a PhD physics student at Berkeley to working at Goldman Sachs as his first job. And then from there, you know, he's a quant in, you know, Goldman Sachs, mm-hmm. and, you know, all these guys are making tons of money hand over fist there. And then what the heck is going on? So he goes from Goldman Sachs, and then he takes his skills that he learned there with high frequency trading. Mm-hmm. And we talked about high frequency trading in episode 27 of our podcast, where we reviewed the Michael Lewis book.
I can see the book.
Flash Boys. Oh yeah, Flash Boys, episode 27 of Michael Lewis. We cannot get a break today. So many interruptions. Flash Boys, yes, Michael Lewis. And okay, so from there he goes and works at this company called Adchemy, I think. I think that was a. And using his high frequency trading skills, he started working on ways to monetize our user information mm-hmm. from like social media and stuff like that, and to be able to quickly sell demographic information to advertisers. Mm. And so that was kind of his focus from that point forward. And I met two guys at this company, worked well with them. So they clicked, they had good complementary skills, strong engineers. He was more CEO, mm-hmm. business type, but with a physics background, very smart, could probably figure anything out. And so they left, and they went through Y Combinator.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, yeah. That's cool.
So we know a little bit of Y Combinator. We consume some of their information and some of their training classes there, trying to get smarter about entrepreneurship. So Y Combinator we know is really cool, but they actually went through a batch, which is much more intense. And, you know, mm-hmm. they're in San Francisco, and they were successful. They got funding. And they got office space and were off to the races. And so he walks you through in the book, tells a story about how he goes through seed funding and then converts seed funding to your Series A, blah, 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 and how all that works with cap tables and all that. So it's really interesting if you're into venture capitalism and startup, that whole culture. It's a really wealthy read for that type of information. Wealthy read. It's a wealth of information for that kind of thing. Just a little bit more about it. They end up selling the company to Twitter for $5 million, but they don't get any money because of the investors.
Yeah.
And they basically get nothing. And what the team splits up because of a decision that Martinez makes. He decides Facebook is courting him because they want something similar for selling ads and stuff like that. And he's got some secret idea that it can help them grow right mm-hmm. before that Facebook goes IPO. Mm-hmm. So his gamble is that Facebook is about to go IPO, and I can bring this, you know, these ideas for this new technology to help quickly sell ads like they do in high frequency trading. Mm-hmm. And maybe he can make a lot of money in this Facebook IPO. So he gambles that that's going to be a win for him. While his two co-founders, he basically sells them to Twitter is okay. what happens. And so nobody makes any money. The only real return that they get is jobs at Twitter and Facebook.
Okay.
After this whole startup thing.
Wow.
So working their tail off, 16-hour days for 1 to 2 years, and then this is the end game for that.
It's an argument to not get investors.
Yeah. So that was a really interesting part of the story. But the meat of the story is really Martinez's stint at Facebook and how that all went with the IPO and everything. Mm-hmm. And net-net, he doesn't make that much money. It sounded like just under $1 million mm-hmm. after 2 years at Facebook, which is not bad. But if you're living in San Francisco, it's hardly enough to like survive. And he makes the case that if he were married and had another similar income stream in his family, then maybe he could have a somewhat comfortable lifestyle in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But barring that, he just ended up living on a boat there.
That's pretty cool.
And apparently he still lives in a boat. I don't know. And the other two that went to go work for other two, let's see, their names were Matthew McKeegan and Argyris Zimnis, a Greek guy. Those were his two co-founders. They were at Twitter. And it sounded like they ended up a little bit further ahead because Twitter stock price went higher than Facebook, and they were there for 4 years, and they were 100% vested and all that. It sounded like they did pretty well at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But just really fascinating that all that work they put into a startup, the real the real benefit of what they had done was to create an identifiable, well-functioning team. Mm. And so that was my big takeaway from this whole book. And it's really summarized on page 341. I'll just read it real quick. He says, why do Facebook and Twitter acquire piddly little companies like AdGrok, FriendFeed, and Aardvark? Never heard of Aardvark. We've already discussed how corporate mergers and acquisitions are basically recruitment via other means. Mm-hmm. In the Valley's overheated market for technical talent, but there is another motivation. By hybridizing their corporate DNA with the pluck and daring of the startup entrepreneur, they revitalize their internal cultures and ad traits not typically found among their recruitment fodder, i.e. smart but obedient engineering grads. And remember we talked about how it would be cool to start a recruiting firm?
Yeah.
Where we sold teams of people instead of individuals, because it's really the team that's so difficult to build.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the value that you could provide to a company, is to have a well-functioning team. Well, that's really what Y Combinator and Start and the kind of the startup culture is all about. There, that was kind of my takeaway from this. Maybe it's not truly like that, but it seemed like the real value from Y Combinator is highly functional, well-oiled teams. Almost more than the product that they are developing or the technology that they are developing. It's like, well, how well can these guys do in terms of making money, entrepreneurship, building product, all that kind of stuff? And if they're good at it, then hey, let's fold them into one of these big companies, because they're going to add 10x value to what we're already doing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So yeah. I thought that was wow. We talked about that.
We did.
Like a decade, when we first met, we were like, you know what? I miss working with my team, the team at X company. We were so good together, but people start chasing higher salary, or they get disgruntled about something, and the team gets destabilized and falls apart. And then before you know it, everybody's gone, and the company is hiring new people, trying to fit them together into a well-oiled machine. And it takes time, it takes money, and
it's hard. It's hard.
It's all about the team.
It is.
It's very important. So that was a great takeaway, I thought, from that. Now, I'm a solopreneur right now, so I'm working by myself. So I'm like, man, it would be nice to have a team of engineers working on something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Move so much faster.
Somebody to talk to software about and solve problems together. Yeah. Totally.
So that was my one takeaway. The other takeaway is kind of anecdotal in a way. I went hunting this past weekend. I was going to spend the weekend, but it got too cold, and so my plan was to go up in the tree stand on Saturday, but I got there Friday. I was going to go up in the tree stand Friday night, but really I was too lazy. The wind wasn't great, and so I thought, well, maybe if I just sit in the grass, hide in the grass, mm-hmm. I'll be able to see some deer walking by and maybe get one that way. I've never done that before. I'm usually up in the tree, but so I thought, well, let me just try it. So I had to build a hypothesis about where they might be. So there was a lot of footprints in the sand. So I knew that the deer were hanging out in this general location. I thought, well, maybe given the wind the way it is, and I'm hiding in the grass, that they won't smell me and that they'll come up this trail. Mm-hmm. And but I wasn't sure, because there's a to my left, I had a 90 degree kind of field of vision. To my left, I had a whole nother field. And I know the deer would come out there at, right when the sun comes down and in the early morning to feed. And so I'm sitting there kind of trying to look back and forth, and then I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna place all my bets straight ahead, and I'm not gonna move my head anymore. I'm just gonna face straight ahead. And I realized at that point that's what life is. It's placing bet. It's making a bet, using as much information as you can to make an informed bet, in the hopes that bet will pay off for you in some way and provide some successful return. And so that's what I did. And I sat there and sat there and sat there, and the sun went down. I'm like, oh, I'm screaming. I'm so frustrated, because I'm tired of sitting there still.
It's cold.
There's nothing. There's just birds flying around. Like, it's cold.
Not even the squirrel to entertain you this time.
No squirrels, nothing. And so it's getting dark and dark and dark. And, I'm about ready to call it. Sure enough, deer comes right up on the trail. But I missed it, so.
but your instincts were right. Yeah.
He was there.
Your instincts were right.
And so that, so even though I missed the deer, I was like, dang, I called that. Like,
you did?
I didn't see anything else out there, but this guy came right up the trail all by himself. And so part of success is placing bets. You know, we're all placing bets. Every job we take is a bet that this is going to provide some return for us.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking about that because that was another key takeaway from this book, because these guys, you know, entrepreneurs place bets.
Yep.
Like, our hypothesis is that this software or this product or this service that we're building or providing is going to get is going to make us successful. Mm-hmm. It's going to make our company successful in some way. And it's a hypothesis. We don't know for sure. And we don't know how to provide that service mm-hmm. exactly. We don't know how to build that product exactly to maximize the return on the income that we're trying to go after. It's mm-hmm. a hypothesis. It's a bet. We're making a bet. And so I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. How do we make better bets?
Yeah.
More well-informed bets.
Yeah.
And how do we win those bets? How do we make big bets, and how do we win big? That's
mm-hmm.
really interesting to me. So these guys, that's what these guys are doing. And Martinez, when he went to Facebook instead of Twitter, he was making a bet that Facebook stock was going to pop for him and make him really wealthy.
Yeah.
And he was kind of right, but he wasn't ultra wealthy. He was, he still got to like grind. He's writing books and living on a boat. And the other two guys, I don't know. I don't know how well they made out, but they, same bet. Let's start a company. Let's see if this product, this AdGrok product that we're making can make it big for us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can sell to a big company, make a lot of money. I mean, $5 million, you would
think. Yeah, and they got nothing. That just
man,
hurts.
Man, $5 million, that's the problem with venture capital.
Yep, yep, it's yeah. true.
You're not working for yourself. You're working for the VC at that
yeah.
point. So, yeah. So the casino is real. Silicon Valley, the house always wins.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful where you place your bets. So those are the two big takeaways.
Or become the house.
Or become the house, yeah. From this book. Really interesting book about startup culture in Silicon Valley, Chaos Monkeys. It's really good. It was a surprise for me. And the other neat segue for this is that I just also finished reading the Netflix book called No Rules Rules.
Yeah.
And so that, speaking of Chaos Monkeys coming out on Netflix,
together, yeah.
So that was an interesting book too, but that's not technical at all. That's mostly culture based and business based.
Yay!
So I was like, try to keep my eyes open reading that one, but it was all right. So yeah, my two takeaways were make big bets, well-informed bets in hopes of big returns, and two, focus on teams. Teams are very important. I can attest, even at the smallest level, a good team is very important. Even if it's, attorneys and accountants and mm-hmm. things like that, they're still, wives, they're all part of your teams, mm-hmm. husbands, they're all part of your team, and so having a good team is very important. Thankfully, I've got a good wife. I've got a good small team.
A good small wife.
those are two important facets of success. And so pondering success a little, just go off on a little tangent. Everybody's got a different definition of success. And so it's hard to like say, well, what is success and how do you attain it? It's personal. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
But And how you define it is highly personal as well. But those are two important facets for me in terms of how to define my own personal success.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for watching episode 64 of the Dream to Next podcast. We will see you in December. Have a great Thanksgiving and a great holiday.